I can hear you crunching your kale.
I know. I'm so healthy and local. I'm going to a brunch at one.
Kale
Exciting.
and brunch, yeah, you are.
I know. It's so Brooklyn.
Pieces of Katie.
No, I gotta get the oven working so I can cook my turkey.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Morning.
We're back after a week off. This is Nathaniel from the Film Experience, and I'm gonna let people introduce themselves this week because people have new sentences to follow their name with.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm Katie Rich, and starting after you hear this podcast on December 2nd, I will be the editor of Vanity Fair's Hollywood, the new Hollywood section of their website. Which
Congratulations.
it's going to
Katie.
be changing in the future, so you won't notice changes at first. But my name will be there starting in
Yeah,
December, which is
well,
super exciting.
that is so amazing.
So, are you going to keep Reese Witherspoon in the role of Becky Sharp, or are you
I have a
going to
huge reboot
recast?
plan. You won't even recognize it anymore.
Okay,
It's going to
I'm
be an actual
willing.
epic.
Are you going to keep hiding her pregnancy?
I would never hide Reese's lead under a bushel that way.
Oh, thank you. Joe Reed, I am the new entertainment editor at the Atlantic Wire. So, and I've already begun, so you should come stop by and read us sometime. Go to the Atlantic Wire, not the Atlantic, but the Atlantic. Click on the little entertainment tab.
I know we all enjoyed your Holly Hunter piece the other day.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, I gotta give it up for my lady.
And Nick?
Yeah, same shit, different day for me.
You already had your primo gig.
That's true.
You've already achieved all of your dreams.
I know.
I've already
You have nowhere to
had
go,
everything
but
I could ever want.
you've been at the pinnacle for years now. We've all just been
True.
scrambling to
True.
match you.
That's right.
Yeah.
And now I'm in San Francisco and like doing this call from a bay window in the bay. So that
What?
feels like a pinnacle.
Wow.
You really are living the dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let us know if you see Jimmy Stewart searching for blondes.
I will.
Keep your distance. Just he's not reliable in the street.
Yeah.
Especially if he asks you to go clothes shopping,
Yeah.
run
I could
away.
complain about
Don't dye your hair for him. Don't do it.
Same with me. I have the same gig, the Film Experience.
Yeah, but now it's the film experience with Emma Thompson. So
Yeah.
it's even
Oh,
better.
would that she would have a guest column.
Oh
Oh
my
my
God.
Do you
Well,
guys
you did it with.
remember, she used to write, do you guys remember this when she wrote a diary for Premiere?
I
Oh.
do. Yeah, The Sense and Sensibility Diary.
Yeah, it was so fun.
The book is amazing.
Yeah.
Well, you can just tell her that Annette Bening once wrote for your site, so that would maybe entice her all the more.
Yeah.
I think
She's
she
got it.
knows.
She probably does. That's true. You don't
I'm
want to
sure
tell
I
her something
name
you don't
dropped that over
know.
over drinks.
Over drinks. Listen to this. Over drinks.
Wait,
E&M.
did you go to the sing-along Emma Thompson brunch? Is that what this is?
No, I went to the AFI gala of
Oh,
cinema.
yeah.
So I was invited to the exclusive pre-screening party.
You and Nick have been so West Coast lately.
It's true. Yeah, East Coast, West Coast. That's really
It's turning into a hip hop feud. It's
Yep.
true.
I
Wasn't
always
it
knew it would end
always,
this
though,
way.
Nick? Yeah.
Yeah, I've just been looking forward to rap battling with Katie at some point.
Yep. You don't even know what you're in for.
I don't.
She's got kale salad and brunch. You
Think of
are
all
now.
the think of all the rhymes she could drop for Vanity Fair.
It's
I'm
true.
sure so many things rhyme with that. I gotta work on this.
Because we've all been East Coast, West Coast, new gigs, everything, I don't think we've seen many of the same movies this week in order to discuss. But we all have seen Dallas Buyers Club, which would just open in more cities.
Is it doing well? I haven't been keeping tabs on it. I guess it's easy enough to look up as I ask you that. I'll just look it up myself.
The joys of the internet.
I know. I mean, I guess it's hard when something's rolling out. It's kind of hard to tell if it's doing well or not. You know, the numbers.
Yeah.
It has made $1.2 million thus far, and this past weekend it was playing in 9 theaters. Oh no, sorry, 35 theaters. So that's not so bad.
So what you're saying is it's made 900,000 times what the Fifth Estate has made.
It will never stop being fun to make fun of that movie.
Oh, the Fifth Estate. It's funny because I saw the WikiLeaks documentary last weekend, two weekends ago. I can't remember. And I thought that was actually quite good. And I feel like doubly unfortunate that that also exists in a place where the Fifth Estate is so notoriously both not good and not profitable.
And not informative, those, really.
Yeah, well, I think with those documentaries that are about really recent topics, I think sometimes they can feel like a little redundant, even if they're very informative. Like, you've been seeing it on the news over and over again, and then there's suddenly a doc about it.
Yeah. But I always appreciate that, too, where I can, you know, because the news is so limited in terms of, like, time.
But it's a lot of stuff that I had not put together.
Yeah,
this is the We Steal Secrets.
We Steal
Secrets. I realize we've gotten ourselves on a tangent, but it is an interesting movie.
That's okay. It could be an Oscar
contender. Yeah, I think it should be.
Yeah.
It could get nominated for something, so it's okay to talk about it.
But anything that has no chance,
Yeah.
Out of here.
Never speaking of Thor again.
So yeah, Dallas Buyers Club. I'm not entirely sure how much of a, like, commercial prospect that's probably going to be.
Yeah, but that's not that important.
But it doesn't need to... Right, yeah. Exactly. It doesn't really... I feel like that's not why you make that movie. I thought it was a solid little movie. I thought it was... I was kind of bracing myself for... I was not entirely confident that it was going to do right by its subjects. And I thought it did. I thought it told a very interesting story... from an angle that, like, I think just the fact that, like, this story is taking place in Dallas rather than we've seen so many, like, all of the 1980s AIDS stories that we've seen, or at least I've seen, have mostly, like, been New York City and San Francisco, mm-hmm. and, like, very understandably so. But I liked that this was coming at it from even just a geographically off-kilter place.
Yeah.
Well, Joe, as a Jennifer Garner fan, I feel like you would have the biggest reason to be upset with this movie because she kind of barely exists within it and mostly is there to frown, which kind of gets at the heart of some... I mean, Nathaniel, we talked about this on Operation Kino a couple weeks ago. Like, I have some gripes with the movie that don't really extend to not liking it, but the waste of Jennifer Garner is one of the big cardinal sins in that thing to me.
Yeah, that's a character that exists in a kind of middle ground that is not ideal. That woman needs to be in it less or more.
Yeah.
The amount that we get, I mean, I think Jennifer Garner is a great actress and a good charismatic presence, so I think that just, like, her presence there is fine, it doesn't detract, but it does sort of make you, maybe sort of, like, draws a circle around the fact that, like, this woman probably should be, again, seen more or seen less within this story. And I feel like there was definitely ways you could have seen her more. I liked the fact that she had this sort of past relationship with the Jared Leto character, and that was interesting to me. And I feel like I'm kind of torn because I like when movies give you just enough to suggest what the relationship is without having to be like, they were high school classmates. They grew up together.
Yeah.
Now she's, you know what I mean?
I like that too, but not to be, you know, redundant if you've heard the Operation Kino podcast, but my issue with that character is there's not enough of the character, and Jennifer Garner's not doing enough with it. Sorry, Joe. To distract from the fact that it's Jennifer Garner. You know, it's like if you have a big star in a smaller part, they need to really find a character, or they're just a big star on the screen with, you know, the characters that exist in the movie. You know.
Although I think I would have been, I mean, okay, so this is going to get me kicked off this podcast forever. But it's been nice knowing you guys. But I thought it was better casting when Hilary Swank had that part initially. And kept thinking about what an interesting, like, kind of good fit for her that might have been. But
I didn't know that.
Are we okay?
Did she drop out?
I think it was just one of those things where, like, financing on a movie like this is so precarious that they just made it when they could. Because Gael Garcia Bernal was initially the Jared Leto character also.
Which I was dying to see. I'm glad that Jared Leto got the chance to do something daring where Gael Garcia Bernal gets to do that more often. But I would have been really curious to see him play that part.
Yeah. But I did, I mean, I actually liked that Jennifer Garner was kind of recessive in the way she played it. Like, I thought it was not the right story to... I mean, I see what you're saying, and you could easily do both, but I didn't mind that her approach to the performance made sure that Like, it wasn't an actor who was trying to shoehorn into a story that was definitely not about her or her character's experience. And it would have been nicer to see a bigger part there, but I'm glad she didn't come kind of full-bore charisma in the way that you might if you were trying to compensate for a slim part like that. Like, it felt like the movie had a really strong sense of who they were there to commemorate.
Yeah, that's true. It would have been very, it'd been distracting if she'd like really gone for the rafters.
Yeah, there was actually, this reminds me, I went to a tribute to Bruce Dern when I was in LA, and Quentin Tarantino.
With Emma?
Right. Yeah, we were sitting right next to each other now. But Quentin Tarantino introduced him, and they kept talking about this thing called a Dernsy, which I had never heard of before. But it's a little pet term they give little flourishes that he always did in his performance to be noticed, because he was always in really small roles.
Yeah.
So it's exactly what you're talking about. Like, how can I make sure people notice I'm in this movie?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So do you guys buy into the McConaughey buzz around him? Like, and I guess maybe importantly for the topic of this, do you think that he can get enough attention in this crazy Best Actor year?
I like how you said buy into.
That's true. I got us bought into.
Buy memberships and predicting Matthew McConaughey.
I would buy stock in whatever that was. Whatever the McConaughey buyer's club is, I'm in.
You guys, if there was a way to charge people for making predictions, whoo, I'd be rich. I have always been a little hesitant about... I mean, I don't know if you guys remember this, but a few months ago when people were like, he's a lock to win, and then... You know, people got really angry with me when I was like, hey, he might get nominated. but, I mean, that happens all the time, and then people just move on to the next one that's a lock to win, you know?
Yeah.
But I do think it's just such a tight race that I would be really nervous to say that anybody has it, you know, sewn up.
Yeah, sure. I would too.
Because there's more than five people that are still very much being discussed.
But
well,
do you think
there's still
he's...
at least two lead performances that nobody has seen yet, and I'm not expecting Christian Bale to make a dent in this race, but like DiCaprio still could, and nobody's seen that yet, and I feel like it's tough to get a sense of the race just purely because of the unknown factors that we've got. But even still, just from the known factors,
right?
I feel like right now Jared Leto has more momentum than McConaughey does, just from a weakness of the category perspective. Because supporting actor just has a big old hole at the top, and it's waiting for somebody to step up, and I think, why not Leto? Like, if it's Leto and Fassbender, I think Leto might have the edge in terms of, well,
really?
Certainly not might. Well, he's a much more sympathetic character, I think.
Well, I still think we don't really know what's going to happen in that category at all.
Well, right, but that's why we're speculating.
What is this?
Are we not allowed to
speak?
Do that anymore?
No, we're done speculating. Only facts.
Okay, all right. I'll wait.
The boyfriend was watching my screener of this last night, and he had watched it in sort of like a marathon with Short Term 12 and Fruitvale Station.
Oh my god.
I know.
Why would you do that to yourself?
I know, a good question. But anyway, he was obviously very worked up, and he was just like, I'm so angry right now, I need to quit my job and fix the world. After seeing those three movies, you know.
Wow.
And he was saying he felt like the direction and editing, like, you can't just like have here's a scene and here's a scene and here's a scene. Like, he felt like there was a serious lack of shaping beyond the performances.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if that anybody else has that reservation. Or if it's just like the actors were enough, you know, the Leto McConaughey show was enough to entertain you the whole time.
I definitely felt the thinness of the direction, and I kind of like the moments when it got a little bit more flourishy. You know, he had like the noises that he brings out when Matthew McConaughey's character passes out from his illness. That felt a little too much to me. The performances do keep the movie afloat. I tend to value performances that are anchoring a movie a lot, even if the direction is kind of driving me crazy. And I don't know that this movie needed a fancier director, but I do like. I wonder what like. You know, what Steven Soderbergh could do with that, where he doesn't really feel the need to juice things up, and he can just kind of present what's in front of you. Like, the Informant version of this movie could have been really interesting. But I mostly don't hold that against
him. Yeah, I mean, I personally don't think it's poorly directed at all.
I didn't mind it being kind of tacit. And like when a movie star is already going to be kind of out there making a big show of the out of typecasting reach, which is part of why I assumed this might not be a great movie. It just seems so overtly set up as what you would make if you were just trying to plan a career in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel that way. But if the director were also kind of using this as a big audition piece, I kind of liked the reserve of the movie, I guess. And I liked that even though it winds up making it feel kind of dramatically suppressed at the same time, I liked that even when things were going well with the Buyers Club, I just feel like you sit there and watch it atmospherically realizing that this is only going to go so far. And
yeah. I did like sort of the patina of defeat.
Yeah.
Which was kind of interesting, like, the whole time. Because usually, you know, these true inspirational stories, you think there's going to be a lot more inspiration, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I did like that about it quite a lot.
I liked that about it a lot. And it was just kind of a long comet tale, I thought, the last 45 minutes or so, which could break either way, but I think I was surprised by that. Even watching Jared Leto, we're going to have a national referendum at
some
point.
We really have to have a standard. Somebody needs to step in. Some international body needs to step in.
Or perhaps Jared Leto himself. Maybe he can clear this up.
I don't trust him on this issue. No, I need an unbiased third party.
Yeah, fair enough.
We need an independent prosecutor.
Somebody call Claire Danes.
Yeah. I refuse to do that. I don't remember what I was saying. Oh, just that like his kind of slow, they didn't totally melodramatize the like, and now it turns out he's a drug addict. Like it just, he was in bad shape for most of this thing. And you realize this is not somebody who's set up to be like super spunky sidekick. All that well, which I thought was great.
Mm-hmm. I like that the movie neither indulges him nor, like, shames him too much for that. Like, I think, if anything, I could maybe have done with one fewer scene of McConaughey walking into a room and getting a round of applause, but, like, other than that...
Yeah,
I thought it was solid.
I was just so sad that it was, like, the last James Seamus movie at Focus. Like, it's just sad that he's not there anymore, and it's so emblematic of the kind of movie that he made sure that they made. And welcome to 50 Shades of Grey now, like, whatever. I just hope that company has a future to it that looks anything like its recent past.
Yeah,
because they were always one of the best distributors.
Yeah,
for sure.
It was sad getting their screener package and having it just be Dallas Buyers Club. Like, man, it used to be like Focus would have so much of the really exciting year-end stuff.
Mm-hmm. I still remember getting extremely, extremely dorkily excited when it would be a new Focus DVD and you would get the Focus trailer
before
it. And then, like, and because they would do, like, and coming soon, and they would have, like, two or three clips of, like, movies you hadn't seen before. And I don't know. I just felt like that was one of those. I was really sort of buying into sort of the magic of the studio. And that was a little bit in reaction to the way Miramax had marketed itself. And
no, I was going to say that's exactly what I went through with Miramax in the early, early days.
But God,
like,
I loved
seeing,
it.
Seeing the Miramax logo in like 92, 93 was always so exciting.
And Miramax was always very good about reminding you like what it had done previously and how sort of everything ties together in terms of like a standard of quality, which was, you know, marketing, of course. But like also it made you feel part of a club that I liked, and I liked, and I think Focus did that as well. R.I.P. Good Focus.
I guess now it's Annapurna, that logo that pops up, and you're like, aha, I know what these people are doing. It's a very different kind of self-marketing, but
yeah,
it started to feel that way.
Yeah. I just think, like, she must have so much money. How much money does she have? Like, so much.
Oh, all of it. All of the money.
Who I missed who we're talking about.
Oh, Megan Ellison.
Oh, okay.
Who is Annapurna and is like the heiress to billions of dollars or something.
Yeah. And can just be like,
hey, well, if you got it,
like,
spend it on the good stuff.
I know. Yeah. I mean, what would you do differently if you had billions? I feel like I'd do exactly what she's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely get some movies made.
Although, like, there was an interesting article, I forget where it was. I'll have to look it up, but saying how some of the green lighting that she's done and the, you know, I mean, this sounds like that thing that movie writers do all the time where we like take something that's probably 90% good and write an article about the 10% of it that's not good. But, but she, in giving things like Killing Me Softly $30 million, where in the production process they normally would have had to fight to get 10 or 12, they wind up looking like bigger flops when they don't work.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And that The Master had a little bit of that problem also. I mean, it feels to me like a comment that's so internal to like the 6 months when a movie comes out and it's being measured as a commodity, and none of that stuff's going to matter later when it's about the movie. But she is working in an industry that's obsessed with the 6 months when it's a commodity. And so it might be limiting her ability to do this for a long time or making people kind of reluctant to work with her because they think sometimes it's putting too much pressure on these films that aren't really built to sustain pressure to have those.
Or that type of pressure.
Yeah, exactly.
The commodity pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like we all knew The Master was going to be a blockbuster.
I know. Yeah. I still can't believe Spring Breakers isn't going to become a franchise. Because spring happens every year is one thing.
As do bikinis.
Mm-hmm.
As do drug dealers.
Did you guys actually think that Matthew McConaughey was really good in Dallas Buyers Club? Because I thought he was great. And I felt like we talked about what might happen to him prospect-wise. But did you like the performance?
I thought he was great.
I agree.
Yeah, I thought he was very good.
Because what I was worried about with the performance was the gimmick of the weight loss.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm not saying it happens all the time, but a lot of times with performances that do have those easy hooks, they don't really, they over rely on that hook being the performance. But I really felt that he was doing a lot with the emotional aspects of the character as opposed to just the physicality, so I really I thought he was very good in it.
I thought there might be, either from a director or a producer, more emphasis on like the comedy or the something, the pathos of the like, but I am straight, I would like to remind you of that, and like I'm real rough and tumble, like, and I was glad that the performance didn't have a whole lot of that. I really liked, this is I guess a credit to the movie too, but I like that there wasn't kind of one scene where he suddenly understands the gays or gets better with them. It's not even really clear what he thinks, you know, by the end of it exactly. And I liked that he wasn't playing scenes that he could have with kind of annoying face pulling about, gosh, I've never thought of that before, you know, or whatever. Stuff just happened to him and you assume he's thinking about it. But yeah, I liked it a lot.
And the way that he embraced kind of the really the meanness of the character, like he doesn't try to do this, you know, forced perspective, like coming from today, I know that it's wrong to be homophobic. Like you really kind of, you see how it wouldn't have even occurred to that guy back then that being gay was remotely okay.
Well, and even in that scene in the supermarket, which is probably the closest that comes to it, there's a streak in that confrontation where like he already doesn't like this guy because this guy was a dick to him and this guy sort of like, sort of shunned him and was disloyal to him. So it's not like he still is not, McConaughey's still not being painted entirely as this white hat riding in to save the poor minority, which I was worried. I remember when I had seen that scene in short form before the movie, I was worried that that was going to be the
It had enough backing to earn that moment.
And have you guys been reading the stuff about, you know, is Jared Leto's character just reprising the sort of, like, pathetic, tragic, gay trope?
I had, but I'm not entirely surprised that that's...
No, I'm not either. But how do you feel? How do you feel?
I thought the character was specific enough that it didn't... I didn't feel that way watching it.
Well, and look, like, the fact of the matter is that at the time...
Most people died.
Well, most people died, but also, like... gays were disenfranchised enough that, like, that portrayal of somebody who doesn't have a whole lot of power isn't exactly offensive to me because it's not exactly untrue. Like, societal lack of power translates to personal lack of power, and I thought that was perfectly in line with both the story that they were telling and the character that he had created.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you got too yeah, if you switched up too much to avoid those things, you would end up being anachronistic in some ways.
Like, not to say that there weren't people who, like, you know, were strong back then. Like, that's not what I'm saying at all. But just, like, that's not, I don't know, I didn't think it was any kind of beyond the pale.
Right.
Well, and like I said about the specificity of his character, like, I was way more, he was giving me enough that I didn't even, wasn't even thinking about that.
Yeah.
Because I was more thinking about, like, what his relationships with people were like what exactly was going on with him and drugs, because I thought he played the variations of being high very, really well, I thought. Other than Dallas Buyers Club, we haven't been seeing the same movies, so we thought we'd discuss older films we'd recently seen. Katie?
Oh my god, I can't believe you're starting with me. I have been spending most of my free time mainlining Scandal for the last few weeks.
Uh-huh.
So it's taken up all of my movie watching time. I'm sitting here racking my brain. Oh, you know what I did? I wrote a piece on The Long Goodbye, so I watched, not all of The Long Goodbye, but a lot of it, rewatching it for writing this thing. And I mean, I'd seen it a bunch of times, so it wasn't something that was new to me. But that movie gets funnier every time I watch it. I enjoy it. It gets funnier. It's always, like, it's always been funny, but it gets funnier to me every time I watch it. I feel like I get Elliot Gould's version of Philip Marlowe more every time. And I don't know, having not spent very much time in Los Angeles, I enjoy visiting that version of L.A., because it feels much more specific and interesting than most of the ones that you get.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the 1973 Altman adaptation of Raymond Chandler.
The Elliot Gould clued us into Robert Altman.
Yeah, exactly. And the 70s in general.
Nick?
We just had the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival here, so I was on the jury for documentaries, so I've been spending most of my time watching those, but the other movies I've been watching have been for teaching, so I just finished Killer Sheep and Hester Street last week in class. And I hadn't seen either one of those in a few years, and I think they're both really great. Killer of Sheep especially, my god. If you can find the DVD of that anywhere still, did you guys see that when it got re-released in 2007, which was actually its first release, even though it was 30 years old?
Yeah, I remember when that happened.
I did not, but a friend of mine owns it, so I'm going to borrow it.
It's so, I mean, it kind of takes some getting used to, because it is, I mean, it was a MFA thesis film, and, you know, the production values are what that implies, but I totally sign on to whoever, Scott Foundas, or whoever says, like, kind of famously on the jacket, like, if this movie were about Italian people in the 1940s, everyone would have memorized every scene. Like, it's so affecting, and the scenes all have really weird structures, and none of them are really the same as each other, but it's just this really inspired glimpse into one guy and trying to just figure out a way to handle being impoverished, but with none of the dramatic structures that usually implies. In L.A. And then Hester Street, have you guys seen that? The Carol Kane?
I love that one.
I watched that in college, actually. They showed it to us, not in a film class either, but in a Jewish-American history class. And
oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember liking it quite a bit.
You guys will love why I watched it. I was at a party for The Artist in its Oscar-winning year. And Carol Kane...
With
Emma Thompson. And Carol Kane was there. And
what?
And I was so excited to see her. And then because I was like sort of walking right toward her, not on purpose. It's just like that's how I saw her, you know. So I would have directly been in conversation proximity to her, and then I diverted because I hadn't seen Hester Street, and I'm like, what if she wants to talk about Hester Street?
That is a very specific kind of neuroses.
So
let me tell you,
in a lot of situations, like you'll be at the grocery store and you know gravitating toward an aisle and be like, "What if? Oh my God! What if she wants to talk about Hester Street? I don't know." She seems less likely to want to talk about Hester Street.
Don't leave the house without having seen
everything
Hester
in life is a landmine.
But I can say. But I can thank that party for getting me to finally rent that movie, which was very good.
Yeah.
And have you seen her since? That's the real question.
I have not, and I keep waiting. I'm like, I am going to be ready.
You're so ready for your moment with Carol Kane.
When we watched Annie Hall on Dog Day Afternoon in this class also, and so Carol Kane has been like our unofficial mascot. And
yeah.
I'll have lots to say to her if I ever get invited to a party.
I'm just going to ask her to hit me with a toaster. It's fine.
Oh, all these old movie references, which are on topic.
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely.
So I watched The Court Jester. That's, I have a back-to-back old movies at the AFI because I was, you know, out in LA. And one thing that's cool about that festival is in addition to the new movies, they also show, like, restorations of older things.
Uh-huh.
And so they showed Danny Kaye's The Court Jester and The Last Emperor, which was Bernardo Bertolucci was there.
Whoa.
And he's
not so mobile these days.
No, he was like the only like celebrity director not to be up on the stage when they introduced their movie,
yeah.
But in the audience, like the spotlight came to him. Cause he was in a wheelchair, but unfortunately it's now in 3D. That's why they were showing it in the Chinese theater, this restored 3D version of The Last Emperor.
Yeah.
But it was cool to see it again because it had been many years. And but The Court Jester, I had only seen it when I was a little child, and it was so freaking funny. Have any of you seen that in your adult lives?
My coworker down the hall is always telling me that's one of his favorites, and I'd never even heard of it.
It is super, super funny. Glynis Johns, Danny Kaye, Angela Lansbury, Basil Rathbone. I mean, it's just funny from start to finish. And really fun sword fighting scenes and
Angela Lansbury sword fights?
No. but she plays a bitchy princess, and Glynis John is sort of this feisty, like rebel.
Sword fighter?
Yeah. But she doesn't actually get any sword fighting scene, but she is a sort of soldier, you know.
The Surgeon General's recommended daily dosage of quavering voices must be really tested to limits with Angela Lansbury and Glynis Johns. My golly.
But anyway, if readers haven't seen that since they were a child or have never seen it, I have to recommend it because I had such a ball watching it and I just did not remember it being a great movie at all.
Was it in 2D?
Yes, it was.
That's good. Or maybe not. Maybe it would have been better if the Court Jester felt like you could touch him.
But oh yeah, because if I hear one more person introduce their 3D movie with, we just wanted it to be in 3D because we really needed you to feel connected to the story. We really need you to feel immersed in the story. I was just like, I've been watching movies my whole life, and I've been plenty immersed. Thank you.
Yeah,
you know,
I
seem that immersed to me, I have to say. This finally gives me the doorway to broach that topic.
Yeah, you need to love these movies more, Nathaniel. It's concerning.
Yeah, it's just frustrating. It's like they don't even trust the art form or something, or we have to have something newfangled for you to understand storytelling. It's just really bugging me.
Technology makes everything better. It's an indisputable fact.
It's really bugging me. And when that came up was the screening of this new film, Charlie Victor Romeo. I don't know if any of you have heard of this.
Oh, the Black Box one.
Yeah, so it's based on the stage play about sort of airplane crashes and what goes on in the cockpit. So it's all based on like actual like transcripts of what people said to each other in these planes that were going down.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and there's like six plane crashes in a row and you just sit in the cockpit with them, right? But it was filmed in 3D, but it was just the stage version basically filmed. So they filmed it live and there was just no point in it being 3D. Because there was almost no depth because it was like
a cockpit.
Yeah, a cockpit and a like on a stage, you know, because they were performing for a live audience. It was just, I was just like, why is this 3D? Like, it just made me crazy. But now I'm way off topic. The point is, Danny Kaye, The Court Jester, super funny.
Yes.
No, the point is Carol Kane.
Yes.
Joe, did you see a Carol Kane or Danny Kaye movie this week?
I didn't. It's funny. I realized as I was sort of preparing for this that I haven't seen a non new movie since Halloween. Well, that's not true. I saw a couple yesterday, but they were for the supporting actress SmackDown, so I'm not going to talk about them here because I need to save up all my
gag order
for that. Yeah. but yeah, I feel like the last, like, I watched a whole bunch of, like, scary movies on Halloween and, like, reminded once again how much I love 28 Days Later, and I think it's just an absolutely, maybe perfect horror film. I think it's just incredible. But I'm going to cheat, as I'm claiming my want to do. I just wanted to very briefly talk about this documentary I saw last night at Doc NYC, because you're not going to hear about it otherwise. And it's called We Always Lie to Strangers, and it's about Branson, Missouri, which I had previously only known about through The Simpsons, which is probably how I know about 65% of my knowledge of the world, so that's also fine. But I really liked it, and I came home and I tweeted that when I call this the cracker 20 feet from stardom, know that I mean that as a huge compliment, because I do. But it is most definitely the cracker 20 feet from stardom, and that actually got retweeted by both directors of the movie, AJ Schneck and David Wilson, both retweeted this, which was somewhat embarrassing to me that I reminded once again that, like, Twitter's for everybody right. can see it. And then last night I get home, and Katie, this was after I saw you, and I had been tweeted by the mayor of Branson, Missouri, who was in the movie.
Oh my god.
Who goes, thanks, I think.
Wow.
You're going to have a parade in your honor in Branson, Missouri when this is all over.
Honestly, like, Mayor Raylene Presley, like, I meant that in the best possible way, I thought.
You're also going to have a tombstone that says, thanks, I think.
It's true, yeah, did you take your revenge seriously, Missouri? Haven't you seen Winter's Bone?
So,
yeah, but
careful
out there.
Seek out this movie if you can. I think it's playing one more time at Doc NYC, so if you're in New York, maybe sometime this week, go see it. It's wonderful.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah, it is funny about Twitter that it's not private at all.
It sure is not. Absolutely not.
You know, I was sharing I don't know if you guys saw my Niecy Nash story, but I sat next to her at the Steve McQueen event.
And I don't know who that is.
See, that's the thing, is I didn't know who it was either, because I know I'm supposed to, but and I knew that she thought I was supposed to also when I sat next to her.
Is she a Real Housewife?
No, but she's like a television star, right? But I don't watch a lot of TV other than like the HBO and Showtime
series. She was on Reno 911 with Wendy McClendon Covey for
for
referencing. Yeah.
So anyway, I sat next to her, and, you know, she was just like, so, what do you do? I said, oh, I'm a writer. I was like, what do you do? And the look on her face was just,
man.
Like, and I thought she looked familiar, but I just didn't. So anyway, I tweeted that, I tweeted the conversation. I was just like, you look really familiar, but I'm scared to guess why. And she's like, guess, I'll tell you if it's the wrong brown girl. So I said, Reno 911, and she's like, you are correct. So she tweeted that as well. And
this
so
is what Twitter is invented.
Oh my god,
so anyway, I got a couple comments like, how do you know who she is? And I was just like, well, I recognized her, I just couldn't place her, you know.
Loretta Devine?
That happens a lot. I think that's a fair, even
Loretta
if you're very
Devine.
No, I know who Loretta Devine is. Okay.
Oh, right. Oh, Dream Girls, yes. Okay, fine. Yes.
And many other wonders, Loretta Devine.
I know you mean Crash when you say that. It's fine.
Any other old movies you want to share?
I was going to say, is there
anyone else? Is there anybody else here?
Speak up right now.
Yeah, we've been hearing you breathing this whole time.
I think he's calling from inside the house.
Does your kale salad have anything to add, Katie?
Oh, man. It doesn't exist yet. Just wait till I make it. It's going to blow your minds. You're all jealous you're not going to my brunch.
I am a little jealous.
How do you know I'm not going? Maybe
that's
I'm
true.
On a mobile right now.
You're also calling from inside the house, and you're in my kitchen waiting.
You guys, we were going to answer reader questions, but I forgot to put the post. So sorry, readers.
Well, let's think about what the readers would have asked.
Yeah.
Well, did you guys realize the Governor's Awards were yesterday?
I saw some tweets about it.
The honorary stuff. The Oscars.
Old people Oscars.
The old people Oscars.
The regular Oscars.
But I haven't had an opportunity yet. I saw that they had posted on YouTube, but I haven't had an opportunity to watch. But my girl Emma Thompson was there honoring Angela Lansbury.
Of course she was.
It all comes together on this podcast, doesn't it?
It does.
Emma Thompson is everywhere you want to be.
She is hitting the circuit pretty hard.
No, I'm glad to see that, too, because Lord knows I want her at every single award show this season, if only for my enjoyment. So
yeah. I know, but I'm pissed that they've classified her in the dramas for the Globes, right? Because now it's going to be harder to get a speech out of her.
Yeah. That's going to be impossible to get a speech out of her.
All I want was an Emma Thompson speech, and there was a perfect storm that was creating one, and then they fucked it.
Yeah, it's so weird because the movie is a comedy, if you ask me.
Yeah.
I mean, it has dramatic elements, like the backstory is the flashbacks are basically drama, but the entire A story is a comedy about the making of Mary Poppins. Like, and there's musical sequences, so I don't get it.
And what did you say, Katie? It's a story about why P.L. Travers doesn't eat pears.
Yeah. Have you seen? It doesn't make any sense if you haven't seen it, but basically there's like a moment early in the film where like she has a fruit basket full of pears. She's like, no, I won't eat the pears. And then you know that like you're going to get the flashback.
It's true.
What's amazing is that totally made sense even though I hadn't seen the movie. Like it was an amazing window into what to expect.
We'll talk about the movie in detail later. I was not super thrilled with it, and that's kind of indicative of the parts of it that I did not like as much.
Although they did a similar thing with the color red, but then there was no flashback for it.
That's true.
Because she announces, "I've gone off the color red."
Yeah.
And so I was like, "Oh, when's the flashback coming with the red?" But
or why she hates animation, which is she's very adamantly opposed to there being animation. You never really know why.
Yeah.
Well, because Atune killed her brother back in when she was private detective.
Atune dropped a piano on her brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, so wait, yeah, we can't do that one yet because it doesn't come out for a while. But there's definitely a lot to discuss.
You won't let us talk about anything.
Sorry.
The supporting actress movies, my God.
There are strict rules to these podcasts.
Any embargoes to work around. does that do it?
So. Well, sure, but I have one thing I want to discuss, but it might be a very short conversation, because maybe the answer is no from all of you. But are any of you following watching the animated film Contenders?
I am depressed by how few of them there are, but I've also, I couldn't work up the energy to see Despicable Me 2 or Turbo or Epic or half of the stuff that's out there. So for me, it's like Frozen and The Wind Rises, and that's the only thing that has my interest.
I may have not seen any animated movie this year so far, actually, now that I'm hearing you mention all of those.
Monsters University 2, I left out.
Yeah, haven't seen that yet. Like, I will, but, like, I haven't seen that yet. I missed The Wind Rises at New York Film Festival. I haven't seen Frozen yet. So, yeah, I may be at zero animation this year so far.
Wow.
Me too.
Yeah. Well, I know
Not, like, actively. Not like I've been avoiding it. But
I know, Nick, that's not a usual bit of interest for you, though, right?
Well, it's not, but I would say like these last 2 years have made it, you know, there's usually like, it's like a lot of genres where I don't see a ton of, but, you know, something comes along and you want to see it. Like, I don't have anything against it, but I feel like we've been in a pretty fallow period recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I remember last year when I psyched myself into like, oh, it's shitty that I've only seen, I had seen none of the animated films last year either, and then started catching up with them, and beyond our weekly invocation of Paranorman being really good, the rest of them were just so measly. Like, I wish I hadn't spent the time, frankly. Uh-huh. Wreck-It Ralph, yeah. Like, who cared?
Yeah. No, I was just curious because I watched The Croods last night.
Uh-huh.
Oh man, they have been emailing me all the time about The Croods. They really want that thing to win awards.
Yeah, I mean, but it's such a, you know, an open field, essentially, since beyond Frozen and The Wind Rises, it seems like anything is possible, since they have to have five. But, which, you know, is a comment in and of itself.
yeah.
But The Croods was weird, because I don't remember this discussion happening at all at the time, but it was so blatantly allegorical about our political system.
Wait, really?
Yeah, and I don't remember this conversation happening at all, but maybe I wasn't really paying attention because the movie, at the time, I just didn't think anything of the movie coming out. But like the father character is like, you know, the right-wing conservative basically, and the hero of the movie that the daughter falls in love with is basically like the progressive like thinker, you know. And they have literal conversations where the father's like, "I have no ideas."
You would think that Fox News would have gone crazy about this.
Yeah, and he makes fun of him, like he makes fun of the idea of having a brain, the father, and he keeps repeating this thing of, "I have no ideas." And we have to keep things the way they are, keep things the same. It's really, I'm not saying the movie's good, but it was really interesting to see something that blatant, and then
Wow.
what, and then knowing that it was a big hit, I'm like, did people realize what they were watching?
I just love this tableau where the boyfriend is crying into a bucket and quitting his job because he's watching Fruitvale and you're watching The Cruise.
Hey, I've already seen those other ones.
Yeah. And you don't even like Short Term 12, so why watch this one?
How dare you?
Okay, well, that was fun.
Yeah. Oscars.
Yeah.
How about them Oscars?
How about them Oscars and them Croods?
So you're really talking about the same thing when you're talking
I
about the
know.
Oscars and the
Crude
Croods. They
equals
are
Oscar.
one and the
I hope
same.
the Croods themselves give away an Oscar at this year's
Oh
ceremony.
my
I hope they.
God.
I would not put that past the realm of possibility.
The Croods and the Hemsworths all together on the stage
Oh
presenting
man.
best visual
I
effects.
did receive Rush in the mail, so maybe I'll
I did
watch that
too.
today.
Have you not seen it?
Oh, Nick, talk about Rush. Fight with Katie about Rush. Fight, 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 fight.
We have ringside seats, Joe.
I'm just
Yeah.
strongly a team Daniel Brühl. That's what I'm going to fight about. Everything else I can concede mostly. But I did like it.
I just thought it was like 2 hours long, right?
Yeah, it's really long.
And I literally never had any idea about anybody or anything in it that I didn't have from the 1 minute trailer. Like, nothing happened, is what I thought. Like, say some, do something. What? I don't know.
Are you saying there's no intricacies of plot in a boo-hoo r race around in circles on a track?
Well, I mean, no, I mean, there's like, you know, intricacies of plot, whatever, but like, you know, intricacies beyond sort of like the incredibly strict opposition the movie decides to build between this man and this man who are dissimilar. Like, yes, they are. I don't know. And then they're just, yeah, I don't know. There are just so many shots that didn't need to be there. Like, so many. Like, that movie could have been 20 minutes long and a really good documentary short. Or a Daniel Brühl, you know, I'm not going to get in the middle of that. Like, no problems. But why make it? I just couldn't figure it out. Ryan Grazer read an article or went to a car race once and was like, this is going to be exciting for the kids. And suddenly
I don't let this be the last time we hear your Brian Grazer impersonation.
Yeah, that needs to be a recurring favorite.
Yeah, that needs to be a thing. That needs to be our fifth co-host right there.
Wait, I thought we gave that spot to Sofia Okanada.
She's been silent for too long. She's been usurped.
Yeah, it's true. She's been in a power here.
I almost thought I saw her the other day walking around in Soho, and I got so excited in that like half a second for like, I cannot wait to tweet this at Nick and Nathaniel and Katie. Like, that's how my
It
life is. That just sort of like.
was Niecy Nash. It was the wrong brown girl.
She's everywhere.
She's everywhere and nowhere at once. Yeah.
All right.
Okay,
Enjoy
bye.
it.
Okay, bye
Enjoy your
everybody.
kale salad.
Oh, I will. I'll
Enjoy
send you all
all of your
pictures.
kale salads,
I'll send you
everybody.
so many pictures. Your metaphorical kale salads will treat you well today.
Yes,
Okay.
exactly.
Bye.
Okay,
Bye.
bye.